It's the 19th of January. The year is 2022 in the Lucy Coleman studio from Los Angeles, California, in the United States of America, on God's good, great planet Earth. I got up this morning and had my regular cup of coffee and began to look at world news to see what's going on. Today in the world, it looks like a lot of us think that the Russians are on the brink of starting a war in Europe over there, the same thing, territories, whatnot. But I'm more concerned about my nation, the United States of America, where I live. And with the virus raging war on humanity, especially in large cities like this, out of an abundance of caution, I'm thinking about cutting out a lot of my social events. I'm having an extra amount of aches and pains where I usually would not have. And trust me, I have been out of the public eye. I'm kind of happy, and I still have this rental car in my driveway. I have to go to the hospital tomorrow. I have a medical appointment with my cardiologist. Then after that, I'm going to turn the car in. Hopefully today I'll go to the supermarket and pick up a couple of extra cases of water or soup or something like that I may need, canned goods and things like that. I'm kind of like unconsciously storing up things for myself. And I don't like hoarding food and things like that. Let's see. I don't know anybody in London, Kentucky, so that has to be, see, I get these kind of phone calls in, and people are always trying to sell me things and trying to get me to buy things. It's a different world out here, but let's get back to the job thing. I went to the post office, and lo and behold, the postal service worker brings me a handful of mail. I mean, and as I was leaving the post office, there was another African-American male, and he had a handful of mail also. And he told me, he said, you know, these youngsters don't want to work. They don't want to work. It wasn't the way that we were. And we spoke as we left the post office, and he said, you know, man, when there was a job out, we would go and get this job and be happy to work it. Not now. So I've come to the realization, and I want to share that with you. I've come to the realization that I live in a far different world today than I grew up in. The light just came on. I like the style of the dress of clothes that young people wear. I'm dressed in the style right now. I don't have on a bunch of brocans. I don't have on a plaid shirt. I have on a nice, what do you call this color? My daughter bought it for me for Christmas. It's a hoodie. And I recently purchased a beautiful pair of jewelry. It's a necklace and a bracelet that I have on when I wear my rings and whatnot. I love the styles that people dress in and the clothes and the shoes. As a matter of fact, I was looking at a pair of leather shoes that I'd like to order. I don't have to go to shoe stores. I can just measure my own shoe size and order the shoes, and whoever delivers them will deliver it right to my front door. I'm living in a different world. I don't have to go to the supermarket to purchase water. I can have the water delivered to my front door tomorrow. It's a marvelous way to live, but at the same time, a dangerous way, because it makes me independent of having to do anything, and that's really a dangerous way to live. I was supposed to be planting things in my garden, vegetables and things like that, but that hasn't become a priority for me. I live in Los Angeles, a big city. I'm looking out of the Lucy Coleman studio window right now, and my neighbors are there. Their windows are open. Their cars are in the driveway. A lot of people elect to work from home. I have right across the street from me. Her name was Cherie Villahermosa. She moved out with her sons, and this house belonged to her mother. And, boy, you hear these things on my system here. I don't know where those sounds are coming from. I'm going to try to ignore. But there are at least three families living in that house across the street. At least three families living in one house. And I always see their cars at home. I don't know what kind of work they're engaged in, but they're living. It's a different kind of a thing. When I lived here, I would get up. They'd see me backing my van out of the driveway, going to work every morning, Monday through Friday. Saturday, I'd have some kind of situation with the kids and the wife. And Sunday, of course, we would go to church. During the week, I'd have my Bible studies. But no, everything has become virtual now. I see the different kind of cars that people drive. They're driving Jaguars. People can buy whatever car they wanted. I recall back in the day when you wanted a nice car, you usually got a Honda, a Ford, or a Chevy. But now people are buying Lexuses, electric cars. In this rental car, I haven't even looked under the hood. I wouldn't know what I'm looking at. It's a completely different world than I'm living in. I've learned to assign myself to this world. I understand in the purest way why people my age become ill and die. It is because becoming adjusted, man, while I'm speaking, big FedEx truck drives up, and what makes this FedEx truck driving up, it pulled in front of the late Leo Fuller's home. Leo Fuller was a black man that when he and his mother bought the house one house down from me, the house that was bought by the Castinians. Oh yeah. See, they're man. I'm telling you, FedEx delivering this huge package. Leo Fuller was an African American male, the only son of his. Well, I never saw a black man around the house there. When Leo came up, he lived with his mother. And Leo was, I guess you can call him, an activist. He was African-American that was very proud of being black. And he, after his mother passed away, he remodeled the house. He did it with his own hands. He was very constructive in building things, painting and glass walls and things like that. I've been throughout every room in the house. He really built it, and it was a masterpiece. Leo went to the Philippines to get a mail order bride, and I forget what province he went to, but he brought Lisa back, married Lisa. They couldn't have children together, so he adopted a young Filipino baby, named her Leslie, because he was impressed with the way he saw me raise my kids on the block. And Leo was a black activist, if anything. If he were alive today, and if George Floyd was killed, Leo would be walking up and down the street with his gun on. And I told him, nah, that's not the way to handle it, Fuller. You can't respond like that. Anyhow, there are Anglos living in his house. It looks like at least three different families live in there. I mean, on this street, which used to be predominantly black after the older whites, because I moved in a house that was owned by the Simmons, a white family. And all around me, my neighbors were white. Then they turned black and now Hispanic. And it's becoming white again. Gentrification is taking place. People's work habits have changed. Their ideologies on religion has changed. The way they feel about life has changed. It's not about a class struggle where I live. It's like I live from month to month on what I work to make an earning for myself. I recall when I was helping out a number of young men, and they would come and stay with me a few weeks or whatnot, and they'd always ask, how do you make money? I'd say, you see me getting up going to work? I'm working at that college. I teach philosophy. Oh, well, are you a full-fledged professor? I said, no, I'm an adjunct. I only work part-time. I fill in when they have an opening to teach a class. If a professor is on sabbatical or something like that, I step in, help the college, and teach that class that semester. What happens, Mr. Coleman, when you don't have any classes to teach? I don't make any money. Well, how do you make money? Well, I'm a pastor of a small, very small local church. And basically, I'm going to tell you, I had maybe two or three very lovely members of the church that financed me. Especially my radio ministry that I had, because I cannot afford to pay that. But they financed it because of how I did radio and how I communicated. It was a blessing to work with those individuals. One of them was my good friend, Dr. Klink. All right, I met fine people, fine Christian people over the years. Brother Dean Gocher, and I would, Bob, would travel to certain cities around California and around the country, the South, and even when I began to travel on my own, I would go to Jersey and put on conferences and trying to warn the people of the great falling away of our Christian values that we have seen take place in this country. You know, and that's another reason why my work ethic is quite different from a lot of people that have a different work ethic than I have, because the Bible teaches that if a man doesn't work, that he shouldn't eat. And I have learned from watching young men, even some of them that used my address as a place to pick up their mail before they got out on their own, to milk the government of everything that they possibly could. And I would tell them, I said, I wouldn't do that because I'd like to know that everything that I've earned is because I've earned it. Well, the values have changed. The values are completely different from the way the values were when I was a younger man growing up in this country. And you see, if you don't realize this, and if you don't, and if you marginalize yourself today and think the way that I was raised was the only way to do life today, you're going to be out of luck. You're going to be out of conversation. I received an invitation to go to a pastor's birthday party this coming Friday at a steakhouse in downtown L.A. I mentioned that. I'm not attending because of the Omicron, because of COVID. I'm not going to get in a restaurant and celebrate someone's birthday like that. There's too much going on now. And there's too much about it that I am not aware of. And out of an abundance of caution, I don't think that I would be able to make or to procure a decent webcast if I go out and make myself sick as a dog and die in my sleep. You know what I did last night? I got to share this with you. Man, this is beautiful just to be able to have this conversation with you. I went to bed last night early, around 9:30, and I find myself crashing earlier because as I get older, I find myself needing more time for my body to rest and to recover. I am finally admitting to myself that I am beyond being a senior citizen. That has been a fight that I have been fighting for years. Now I'm finally coming to the point. I was standing in the hallway in front of the heater, and I said, well, I shut the television off because there's absolutely nothing I wanted to see. The Rams beat the Arizona Cardinals, so there's no more football that I want to see until the weekend coming up. I'm getting ready for that. But I'm changing my lifestyle to do what is expedient for me. I try not to give advice to people that don't require my advice. When my phone doesn't ring from people that used to call me, I'm assuming that they got my lessons and they're going on with it. I got two young men that used to stay with me. One is overseas in another country, and he recently told me that he's finished one of his major documentations overseas, and he's really getting ready to vie for a position with the government. Fantastic. Because when he was going to West LA College, when I first met him, I told him, if you stick in there and choose what you want to do and choose it in the right form, you can get ahead and you could accomplish it. He tells me whenever he communicates with me today, he said, it is you, old man. It is you. He said, not my parents, not my family, not my siblings, no other persons. The only person that trying to get me to go to church was trying to get me to become a charismatic maniac. And he said, you never introduced me to Christ in the 13 years that he lived with me. I never sat down and said, let's bow our heads and ask Christ to come into your heart. Not once did I do that. Why would I do that? When God created him and made him the person he is, and I'm going to introduce him to his creator, he knows who created him, just like all of us know. I think that religion has scarred many of us and has put the wrong type of disposition on us. What we need to do is open up our eyes and discover it for ourselves. I'll be presenting a lecture called, I won't get into that, but I'm working on the lecture now, and it'll be a virtual lecture. It won't be in a hall where other people are around me, but I'm going to catch a lift and go to the location, and I'm going to have everything on my little iPad or whatever you call these devices, and I'm going to present a lesson to men on how not to compromise themselves. You know, how do I live in a world without compromising myself? How do I live me, do me? Oh, my. And I'm constantly running in to individuals that I'm just crazy about. I mean, how do I put it? There are young people alive today in their 30s and 40s that are the most innovative, energetic individuals that I have heard from in my life. And they so remind me of me because I had the same ideas in the same situations. I was watching a lecture on Zoom last night, and I kept writing in the chat box. I was writing about how my children told me about how my wife felt about me years ago before she passed away, and what she knew about me, and how we communicated together, and all those wonderful things. And when I see young people that are able to speak about this in a healthy condition and live a healthy life, it gives me a great amount of enthusiasm as I continuously face my senior years. If you go to my Facebook page, I don't know how much longer I'm going to leave the clip up, the YouTube clip of the Tuskegee Airman that recently passed away at 101 years old. I loved his story. I loved the way he was speaking as a senior citizen, sound mind, intelligence, and can talk about racism from the vantage point without spewing his own individual racial hatred towards anyone that maybe had treated him discomfortably. It was a brilliant piece of work. And that's why I attached it to my Facebook as well as to my website. And I would hope that people would watch the clip and learn from it. Things haven't always happened to me right. You know what? I was thinking about it. When I was in ministry as a pastor, and I warned this young pastor of the Vision Church, I said, be careful of people that'll come and pat you on the back and smile at you and everything, whereas in essence, they wanted what you had. And I told this young man, because I kind of got up and spoke to his little congregation and said, if I want to come to church, I'm going to come to this church. And it's a gay church. It's an LGBT gathering. I don't want to go to one of those evangelical places anymore where everybody got to think alike, look alike, respond. I'm going to respond the way I am. God made me this way. What is wonderful about my life now, and I've learned from the younger people around me, and that's a wonderful thing, about my life now is, and let me try to qualify. It isn't that I lived in fear. It's that I knew that my life, when lived cautiously, I heard a young man say it last night on the Zoom meeting. He said that when he travels to various countries, he's also a gay pastor, and he said when he travels to various countries, he doesn't let the people in the other countries that don't take a liking to men that are LGBT, he doesn't communicate to those people or let on that he is one of those kinds of individuals, because they'll kill you in certain countries. Their religion is of such that if you come there saying that you have the capacity to love, if you're a woman and you have the capacity to love another woman, they will kill you. Some people, some governments, some institutions are backwards in that way. And there are many people in this country that are yet like that because of what religion has done to them. And what was interesting, as I was listening to the lecture, the young man was saying that he used to preach when he was a pastor that you're going to hell if you love other men. I never preached that you're going to hell. I said, people, you know what I used to teach? And those of you that still listen to me that remember when I was pastoring, you can check me on this. I never, ever one Sunday preached a sermon against homosexuality or anything like that, because I would have been preaching a sermon against myself, and I would never condemn myself. Yet, at the same time, listen to this. Listen. See, because there's a lot of you out there still fishing for the hook of your life. You don't know why you are the way you are. Yes, you do. You know exactly why you are the way you are. If I'm going to teach these, and I plan to do so, I'm going to read some of it to you. I'm going to do a lecture on the 5 or 10 laws of non-negotiability. That's what I'm going to do. I want to share with you what it's going to be about. These 10 laws that I'm going to talk about, if you keep these laws, they will procure success in every area, in my mind, I believe this, in every area of one's personal, professional, and social standings. In other words, if you keep these laws of non-negotiability in everything that you do, in every way that you move, you will have success. As long as you live and interact with those not only within his or her own culture, because you can use these laws in your culture or out of this culture, but also you can encourage others to incorporate these very same laws into their own lives and their own daily experiences. Now, this is what's going to make this lecture that I'll be doing, Lord willing, on my birthday, February the 8th on 2022. It's coming up. And I'm in the office working on it now, and I'm putting it together. And I have never put together a lecture or something of that nature that was a failure. I used to do retreats, do lectures. I've lectured the Chinese church, the Korean church, the black church, the white church, and none of my lectures fail. There are rules that are essential in the keeping of these particular laws, and that's what I'm working on. That's the heart of it, because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to pass on the rules that I adapted in my life that made me successful. I have never, except for when I was in the military and I committed insubordination to a non-commissioned officer, and therefore I had to do 20 days in the military stockade because I cursed out a white racist. I cussed him out. And the only reason that he was in Korea at the time is because a bunch of black soldiers in Vietnam had swore to kill him if they didn't ship his behind out of there. And they shipped him to Seoul and put him in the 304th Signal Battalion. And when he first laid eyes on me, and I was E4, getting ready to make E5, I was going to be a sergeant. And I was going to be in charge of my own radio teletype rig. He said, "So what have we here?" And I looked at him and I said, "What the hell you mean?" And he said, "Soldier, is that the way you're going to address me as sergeant?" I said, "Oh, man, please." He got on my case to the degree that I had to spend 20 days in the military jail for insubordination to a white racist. But I got out with an honorable discharge. And you know why? I told you this story before, but I'm going to share it with you again. It is because at that time, when that war was raging in Vietnam, a lot of white folk had sons that were getting drafted because the United States was drafting everybody to send them over there to fight those little yellow people. And I recall I was supposed to spend 30 days in the military stockade, and I only spent 20 days in there because my lieutenant came down and he said, "John, we need you back and at battalion headquarters because you are a good radio teletype operator, and we got 12 young privates that we need you to teach them how to operate this equipment because we have certain senators coming in from the states to see if these privates have been trained adequately in this, and we will give you a stripe back if you train." And they got me out of the stockade. All I was doing was serving strawberry shortcake to the prisoners. That's all I was doing. I wasn't a bad guy. And I trained these privates. They were privates. I have a picture with me with one of them. Man, I'm going to try to find a picture. I know it's on one of my hard drives here. And I wonder if that young man is still, well, we were both young men. He's probably old like me now. His name was Pennelly. That was his last name. I forget his first name. But Pennelly was a private, and I made him a radio teletype operator. And then, of course, within about 40 or 50 days, I was discharged. My tour of duty was over. So I played within the system, but I want to get back to my non-negotiability rules. There are rules that are essential for the keeping of these laws if you're going to be a successful person. That's what I'm working on right now. And I'm supposed to talk through these laws, and the laws will not necessarily have a positive effect in one's life if one is not willing to address the principles with the truthful inner spirit. In other words, if you're going to be successful in keeping these laws of non-negotiability, you have to do it in a spiritual way. Because if you don't do it in a spiritual way, you will not be very successful. And it's going to be, I think, one of the best lectures that I ever put together. And I will let you know when you will be able to come on a Zoom. And hopefully they still have me scheduled for In the Meantime Men. And that'll be on my birthday. And that's my postman. Look at him. That's right. A young man from New Orleans. And he's delivering mail, and I've had the opportunity to meet him. I meet all of my mail persons, talk to them, try to develop a relationship with people to keep it on a one-on-one basis. That's how I stay alive. He's walking his beat, delivering the mail, and I'm still working in the Lucy Coleman studio right here in Los Angeles, bringing you this webcast. I am so glad that you could come and spend time with me. And I am praying that you would continuously offer, what can I say? Offer thanks to God for what He is doing in our lives here in America. We are changing, shifting, becoming more so engaged in the new world order, that's what I call it, that I'm living in. I would hope, as I said yesterday, that there's no EMP explosions in the atmosphere taking us back to the Stone Ages. I would hope that even my grandchildren, okay? And if my grandchildren start making babies, that their babies and their grandchildren will be able to live in a country where people can express themselves and live in peace and harmony with each other. I know that things are rough. Man, I look outside, I'm counting two cars in front of my house. I know the family that lives down the street that drives these cars. I remember the old man that was down there before he died. I remember his wife would walk him down the street, and she said, oh, she would say, yes, I'm going to walk my husband because that's how he stays alive. And he said, I'm trying. Well, he lost the battle with it. And they cashed in the money and bought him some nice cars. Nice little cars, too. And they're all in that same house down there, living in America. Leo went and died. Now someone else is living in his house. I wonder where Cherie is. Right across the street from me was Georgia Lewis. She moved to the Chicago area. I'm wondering if she's still alive. And her brother Taylor, that used to live in that house with her. There was a nurse that lived across the street from me in the other house. Now there's a Guatemalan family there. And I'm watching their third generation grow up around me. Right next to me is where Helen Dunsmere used to live. Has a fine Hispanic family living next to me, brothers and sisters and mothers and aunties and nieces. and grandchildren and family. And right here on Harcourt in the greenhouse with the LGBT flag and the Continent Africa flag is my home in one of the grandest countries that ever existed on the face of the planet in my lifetime, in the United States of America. And I hope that wherever you live, whatever the condition may be, regardless of the amount of money that you have coming in, or what kind of food that you had to eat on the table, and I know the things, equity is not in everyone's favor, and some people will always have to struggle more than other people. But we live in America. And I believe that we are to show our thankfulness to God. We don't need a special day to do it. We don't need a special place to do it in. What we need is a heart to reach out to God. And I did this as I realized that he woke me up this morning. Since I realized that he woke me up this morning, I said, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to promote the idea of change. For those of you that are highly religious people and you don't like the culture that America has embraced, man, you know, one of the young men that stayed with me, he recently moved to another state altogether. Matter of fact, he finally got some sense and married the woman that had his child and moved he, his child, and his woman that he married to another state in the middle of the country near the East Coast and is not coming back here. I said, why are you doing it? He said, I can't buy no home there. He said, You've orchestrated your life right because that's what you're able to do. He said, but I can't maneuver this way. I'm going to have to go somewhere. And he's living in a state where they got cornfields and not too many black people living. And he had to move on. And that's what you have to do. You have to look at your situation. You know, they're talking about the great resignation. These young people don't want to work. No, they don't want to work for slave wages. And then now I am gratefully impressed by the businesses that the young black entrepreneur minds are putting together. It is wonderful. And I'm saying that when you get with the right kind of people and you start putting your lives together, that life itself can become a beautiful situation. And I'm just so happy for the young people around me. God bless you all. Well, thank you for coming to my website again today. I'm glad that I had something to share with you, and I hope that I have something to share tomorrow. I just wanted to share with you that I'm doing pretty good. Sometimes the aches and pains get me, but when I have my mind stayed on, you know, we used to sing a song in church. I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on Jesus. I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on Jesus. Oh, I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on Jesus. Hallelujah. 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 See you next time.